Welcome back, everyone, to our 3PL Summit. I hope everyone is enjoying today's content so far, because we are about to get into the most feared subsection of our industry, and that's going to be legal liabilities for all of you brokers out there. I'm sure, of course, you are nervous to see what this will bring, but I brought someone who's going to deliver this news with probably the biggest smile on his face, and that's our favorite armchair attorney himself, Matthew Loeffler. Matt, thank you so much for joining us today.
Grace, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me a part of this program. And I'm excited to talk about the law and the supply chain, two things you can't opt out of.
Yeah, exactly. It keeps our economy moving and keeps the court moving as well. So I'm excited to dive into this, especially from a 3PL perspective. I think, well, let's start with 2023, because I think there's a lot of key changes and at least responsibility and liability within the industry. Let's review 23 for you. What were some of the major key regulatory and legal changes to the industry that impact stakeholders today?
Well, the thing I'll start off with is the uncertainty remains uncertain. If you're a broker, when can you be responsible for the actions or omissions or negligence of a motor carrier? And the answer is, we don't know that answer at this point. We now have a dispute among the federal courts as to whether a broker can be held responsible for the negligence of a trucking company. The one we talk about most often is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the case with Miller, C.H. Robinson. And the other case we talk about is Global Trans v. Yee. And in the Seventh Circuit, which is where Global Trans was based out of, it's found that brokers cannot be held responsible for the negligence of a motor carrier. But in the Ninth Circuit, there can be. And this Seventh Circuit case, the Global Trans case, got appealed to the United States Supreme Court. But the thing about the Supreme Court of the United States is they don't have to listen to you. They can decide what cases they take up. And in this circumstance, they punted. They opted not to take the case up. So we still have a lot of uncertainty in our entire federal system of when a broker can be held responsible for the actions of a motor carrier. My hope is we'll see more clarity over time. But as of right now, the answer is it depends. It depends on where you live. It depends on where you're doing business. And it depends on where the accident takes place.
I want to start with that big one, because clearly for this audience and today's event, this is on top of everyone's mind. Knowing that this has been brought to the Supreme Court, I think twice now, and likely possibly another chance for it again in the future. How do you lead an organization knowing that there could be a situation where the Supreme Court does take this and maybe makes a ruling opposite in a broker's favor?
If I'm a broker, there's one case that I want to absolutely pay attention to, and that's a case in Texas. And I'm going to talk about it briefly so that the audience kind of has a better understanding of this. In the case in Texas, a young driver, 7 days on the job, was operating a commercial vehicle, truck and trailer, fully loaded, going down the highway. It was snowing, so they were going a little bit below the posted speed limit. Unfortunately, another vehicle in the opposite lane of traffic crossed the center line, lost control, and collided with that truck operated by Werner Enterprises. And a child died, another one was paralyzed, and that case ended up going to trial. And what ultimately happened to trial court was that Werner, the motor carrier, was found to be about 70% responsible. And under this theory called joint and several liability, if you're over 50%, you got to be unhooked for the entire thing. That's $90 million against the motor carrier, and they didn't do anything really wrong, according to all the stuff we saw. It was appealed, and that was, again, rejected. It's up to the Supreme Court of Texas now. But why I use that case, like, with all the interest that's currently part of that judgment, it's over $130 million. If you were a broker and you brokered that load on that truck and that accident happened, you could potentially be responsible for that level of liability. And so few brokers understand that when you're operating in this industry, you can be held responsible, even if you do everything right. So it's very important for brokerages to understand what are the risks, what are the things that are at stake, and to go talk with counsel if you're not sure. Because at the end of the day, the plaintiff's attorneys will come for you. They will knock on your door and they will ask to understand what your pattern is, what your practices are, and they will try to find places they can infiltrate and find you responsible. So that case in Texas really illustrates just what is at stake. It is the stake of your entire business operating. So the more you know, the better armed you'll be in 2024.
You know, I'm interested in your opinion on this too, because I was reading about nuclear verdicts again the other day, and it's especially in this relationship where we're talking about usually, right, a carrier being involved, but then a broker being involved as well. And when I look at these verdicts, if I'm representing like that family, for instance, I mean, wouldn't I have a monetary incentive to make sure that broker is involved with the case? I mean, if I look at who's going to be able to pay a nuclear fronter deck at the end of the day, it's sure the carrier's insurance possibly, but depending on how much they have. But I mean, thinking about it, a broker is going to be probably more likely to pay that out of pocket at the end of the day than a carrier, correct?
That is a really good point you bring up. And it actually, that kind of goes with actually a bill that's in Congress right now that I'll talk about briefly. There's a bill in Congress. It's called the Fair Compensation for Truck Crash Victims. Essentially what it's designed to do, it name's a little weird, but it's about the limitations on insurance for a motor carrier. So the time that we established the minimum insurance a motor carrier must have in this country was 1980. And that number was $750,000. Vast majority of motor carriers operate with about $750,000 of insurance. That barely pays for fixing someone's pelvis if it gets shattered or if they lose an arm or a leg. The reality is most motor carriers are underinsured for the risk that they create. And this has been an ongoing saga for the better part of 44 years. Different people have tried to see if they could raise the minimums for a motor carrier. And it has been met with staunch opposition. And so the thing that plaintiff's attorneys look for is, who else can I tag? Who else might be responsible? And to your question, of course the broker. Of course the broker. If I'm a plaintiff's attorney and I have someone who's been involved with a catastrophic accident, yes, I'm going after the motor carrier. Yes, I'm going after the driver. But I will go after the broker. I will go after the equipment provider if that's what I have to do to make my plaintiff whole. So this idea of what is really at stake, there is an underinsurance question within our industry, and we don't see a lot of traction to increase those limits. And as long as that's the case, brokers will be someone who will be tagged with process. And I'll mention just again a little more legal, like esoteric stuff. When you have insurance as an entity, it gives you two powers. One is the duty to defend, and that's the insurance company paying for the lawyer to represent you, no matter what the cost. They are there to defend you. And then there's the duty to indemnify, which is to pay on your behalf. So there's two separate duties. And as a broker, you really do want to have that duty to defend. You want someone to protect you. So if you're a broker and you don't have a general liability policy or some other thing that can help you cover these types of lawsuits, you might be paying out of pocket. And out of pocket spend for one of these types of litigation, $20,000 to $50,000 a month. That is without having to factor in the ultimate liability you may or may not have. It's just the fact of defending it is expensive.
That's insane. I mean, it's for leaders out there too, right? Just imagine having to plan for that and clearly avoid it at all costs. So anything on the top of your mind that maybe technology-wise that could help a broker kind of limit their interaction or liabilities or maybe operations in-house that could help them avoid some of the issues that we've seen come up in cases so far?
And this is not intended for legal advice, and I'm not giving legal advice through a television program or a podcast. Always consult your attorney if you have a question, but you have a great question there. And it's, what is the answer? What am I supposed to do as a broker? There is no hard and fast rule that says this is what you must do to not be found liable. There doesn't exist. Every state looks at this thing differently. The thing I will say is, establish a process. And never deviate from the process. Use the technologies that are available. Things like Carrier Assure or Highway. And there's a whole bunch of other things. Carrier 411. Use the technology that you have at your disposal. But do not deviate. Make sure your process of onboarding motor carriers is rigorous and that you don't have ways to kind of slip through the cracks. Because when you start breaking your process, that's when lawyers can get creative and say, you have a process. You didn't follow it. That tells me that your pattern and practice is to not follow process, and maybe you should be responsible. So it's very important to establish the things with the help of outside counsel and your insurance providers to make sure you are doing everything right. These things are table stakes in the modern age. And if you don't do it, you will be one of the ones found on the other side of very adversarial litigation.
It's incredible advice that should be taken lightly. And again, reach out to your own lawyers, sorry, for all everyone watching to get that directly as well. Now, I want to talk about 2024. For you, is there any cases that other cases you're watching, any regulation that you see coming that even might relate to carriers that brokers should keep in mind for the next 10 months or so?
Yeah. So brokers usually don't have good insight into what regulations motor carriers are facing. And one very important regulation, it's on the top of the mind for drivers. It's on the top of the mind for motor carriers. And that is speed regulation. In the United States, every single state has a speed limit. They exist already. But the FMCSA, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, the regulatory body that governs trucking companies, has put out a proposed rule to limit speed. Now, when you limit speed for motor carriers, there's a lot of good benefits. One, it's better on your engine, better on your fuel consumption, better on your tires, better on your maintenance. There's a lot of good value. The alternative side is if you're a truck driver who makes their money, their living by miles per driven, like your pay per mile. The slower you go, the longer it takes. And in order for everybody, if they do put out a federal regulation on speedometers and how fast a truck can go, those trucks will have to go to service providers to have their motors reprogrammed to go slower. And that just means if it does happen, things will take longer to get moved. That is the nature of when you slow things down. So while there are advantages for safety and for maintenance and for fuel and for tires and for emissions generally, it is something that brokers should be aware of, because at the end of the day, if it takes longer for your driver to make it to the destination, you probably want to be on top of the regulations that are underlying that. And we expect to see a final rule from the FMCSA sometime in the next couple of months.
It's an interesting one too, because we're not even really talking liabilities. This is almost more of even conversations that you're having with shippers, because at the end of the day, I mean, that would raise prices. You're going to see carriers likely charge more, right, for almost for their time in that regards, and slow
moving.
It'll
be very
similar. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'd be very similar to what we saw at the ELD mandates. So the ELDs had been around for a while. The big trucking companies already had them. Like, they were like, oh no, this is a mandate. What are we going to do? Like, they were helping push for the mandate, to be honest. And with the speed regulations, there's also a similar push. Many major motor carriers have already governed their trucks 65 miles an hour, 68 miles an hour. But independents who have had the freedom to go the speed that they believe was safe, that will be kind of eroding. And I think that we will see a federal limit, whether it's 68 or 71, no one knows. But I do think that that is going to be a major impact, not just for congestion, but also just how fast it takes to move freight from one place to another.
Wow. I want to take, we have a couple minutes here, but I want to take this back to an area that you're passionate about. It came up this past year with non-competes and contracts, and really, even more so, we've seen so many different possible regulations come up in conversations about employee overtime, et cetera. What are your thoughts going into 24? Is this something that brokers should be considering when hiring or even creating contracts for this year?
I love the topic of non-competition agreements. In my career, I have seen and negotiated hundreds. And I'll tell you this, FTC put out a proposed rule to ban non-competition agreements last year. Over 22,000 people filed comments, and it's heartbreaking to see people that are anesthesiologists or custodians that are having to quit their jobs and move away in order to compete. But the reality is, one in five working Americans, that's 30 million people, one in five have a non-competition agreement. And the FTC's authority to make a rule that bans them is dubious. It is very unlikely, ultimately, that the FTC's rule would be enabled and actually go to fruition. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the American Trucking Associations, and literally every single lobbying organization on behalf of industry has come out viscerally opposed to banning non-competition agreements. If the FTC finalizes a rule, I guarantee you they will be sued, it'll be enjoined, it'll be frozen. The only way we see any traction to remove non-competition agreements from every industry, not just trucking, is the thing called the Workforce Mobility Act. It's a bipartisan act in Congress. There are Republicans who sponsor it, there are Democrats that sponsor it, and what it basically aims to do is stop non-competition agreements. One of the most un-American contracts that have ever existed, the ability to ban somebody from doing what they've loved and learned how to do. People have done it with truck drivers. They've tried at least. They've done it with mechanics. They've tried it at least. These things are in every single industry. The way we stop them is to say no. We cannot wait for the federal government to come help us. Each state also has rules on non-competes. Some states, like California, ban them. Some states, like Illinois, require certain language and certain durations to review these things. But almost everybody who gets these documents is either given only a couple days to review them, or they're already working a job and they're given the non-compete and they're basically forced with, sign it or you're fired. And it's very difficult. And I've seen a lot of people's lives ruined and upended by these things. So when it comes to non-competition agreements, there is no silver bullet. It will be fighting in the trenches of everybody who has them and trying to find a way to increase the ability for workers to get the jobs they want. I'll end with this thing. The FTC has estimated, they've estimated that American workers are making $300 billion. That's 300 billion with a B. That they don't get every year because of the use of non-competition agreements. It's a way to depress compensation for workers, and they are very, very bad. It's just one of many post-employment restrictive covenants, or perks, as I call them. And it is probably one I dislike the most, but there's non-solicits, non-disparagement, non-disclosure. There's a million of these things. But non-competes are by far the most hated, and they're the most common we see in our industry and many others.
Yeah. Well, leaving our audience a lot to consider. And of course, we love working with you, Matt, and then helping our industry get guidance through a lot of these tough issues. So thank you so much for joining us today and for our audience. And please enjoy the rest of our 3PL Summit.